Departing for Davos from Fox News Radio, I'm Dana Perino.
That makes me Chris Steirewalt.
And this is Perino and Steirewalt. I'll tell you what.
Tell you what, man.
Oh, we do these on Wednesdays, and it's like, oh, the week is midway through, and you got two more days to go, and poof.
What? You say woof?
I don't know. I have to say, you know, we're going to change the time of day during which we record this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now we do it in the 3 o'clock hour, which is after the 2 o'clock show.
Yeah.
And before the five. And it's like, So no, I think it's better to do it before the 2 o'clock show. And then I'm all prepped and ready for the 2 o'clock.
Well, I think that's true. And also, I think that I have the good vibrations, the esprit de corps that fill us all as we dive into the day here has been attrited less by mid morning than at
attrited.
Attrited.
What does that mean?
To be cut away at, to be ground down, worn down.
Might
like, have you ever heard the expression a war of attrition?
Yes, I do. But why don't you just say worn down, ground
worn down, ding down?
This is a podcast for the people.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not for the dogs.
I number one, am not sure that we really have listeners still, though I see them on Twitter. And number two, you'd have to be pretty weird to want to listen to this in the first place.
So weird. Hey, I've got one update that I need to have a little update.
Okay.
Because we need some prayers.
Hit it.
All right. So Torah.
Oh, no.
Yes. Torah, my sister's.
Oh, diabetic
very
cat.
Very large diabetic cat who's,
cat.
I think, 14 now.
It's old.
Big cat.
Yep.
But that's not, I mean, cats live a long time now.
Okay.
They do.
All right.
Right?
Whether you like it or not.
19 or 20 years. So the update is, as my sister had to take him to the hospital last night, my sister and her husband, Ben. So apparently Ben couldn't find the cat, and then he found him, and he thought he was, you know, had passed because he wasn't moving, just laying there, and it scared him. And so he had my sister meet him at the vet's because she was over at her friend's house.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to stay the night, and he has a UTI infection and all this stuff. And it's not funny, though.
No.
But we aren't
the
laughing.
The cat does not have a urinary infection.
Cats get those all the time.
No, you're making it up. Oh, my gosh.
You don't know that?
I don't know anything about that.
Cats get UTIs all the time.
I hate this conversation so much. I do not have words. Is Torah okay?
Okay. So here's the update as of 2 minutes ago, because I knew nobody that listens would be interested.
Yes.
Checked on Torah a little bit ago. He's eating and drinking. Vitals are good. His sugar dropped to 40. OMG, that is way too low. They only gave him half a dose of insulin last night, so that may be why. They're monitoring today, and she's going to call the doctor back at 4 or 4:30. And the plan is he comes home tonight unless his sugar and white blood count are bad.
And the pee.
but this is quite normal for cats.
I feel like I want to help Torah. I want to do something for Torah. But I also know that now Torah is like $100,000 into veterinary care.
But what if I told you that her other cat, Mowgli, you know, she has four rescue cats.
Yeah, I know.
That Mowgli had a UTI 10 days ago.
What's going on at your sister's house, man?
No, I don't know what happens to cats and why they get UTI infected. But
I've never known a dog to have UTI.
Obviously, dogs are superior in so many ways to cats.
Including
their
urinary system. Yes.
Oh.
Quite so.
Jasper, that dog, Peter had to go away for just a night because he went to South Carolina because he's going to get his motorcycles shipped up to New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he's got to go do that. And it's like the Harley with a sidecar, and it's like a whole big thing.
It has a sidecar?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
Have you ridden in the sidecar?
Of course. Do you not look at Instagram?
No. Never. So there are pictures of
anyone listening, all of our non-listeners, can you please follow me on Instagram? Because my numbers are lower than Kimberly Guilfoyle's, and I got to do something about that.
You got to get it. So
at Dana Perino.
But there are photographs of you riding in a motorcycle.
Yeah, so Peter
sidecar.
Got a Harley with a sidecar. And Jasper loves this thing
I would imagine.
Because he puts his little doggles on, and then he goes all around the thing.
So much tongue flapping.
So Peter went away. Oh, yeah, so Jasper was with his dog sitter overnight because I had a dinner and the blah, blah, blah. So today, we're going to have a reunion at 6:30 as soon as I walk in the door.
Is he going to be excited?
Yeah, that dog gets a little excited.
Yeah.
As you have seen.
as I have seen. And I also have seen when we were in Florida, I saw how much America loves Jasper, is that a person you did not know and had never met presented you with a painting approximately the size of a Times Square billboard. And it was so cool of Jasper. And I thought how unique an experience it would be to be the person whose pet is so famous that when you go places in public, they present you tribute in art.
But if you were on Instagram, you would see that I posted a picture of that painting that just arrived from Florida, and it's going to be on The Five tonight, but this podcast will air after The Five. So anyway.
Twitter's more than enough for me.
Twitter? You want me to put it on Twitter?
Yeah, put it on Twitter so I can see it. Twitter's okay. More than enough for me. I think Instagram.
I don't understand. What do you do when you're bored if you don't have Instagram?
Well, right now, write a book about American populism.
How's that going?
I hate it and love it. I simultaneously, I'm in a phase where I despise my insights and think that they're derivative and stupid, and question even the very premise of the book. And then sometimes I say, oh my gosh, I need to write 10,000 words immediately. So I think what's good about it, maybe you had the same experience, the iterative process where it's sort of like, two steps forward, one step back. You like surge through it, and then you're like, oh, most of that was garbage. I need to take that out and clean that up. I guess what I'm saying is I'm learning that the editing process is even more important than the writing process itself.
Absolutely. The selling process is the hardest, frankly. So just prepare yourself
okay.
for that.
I'll get a helmet.
Yeah, I think that the editing process is great. And gosh, when you realize, sometimes you like write a good paragraph, you feel so good about it.
Yeah.
Then you go for a walk and you come back and read it and go, God, that's yeah, stupid.
Were you high? What is that? You and I were, I think it was you I was talking, was I talking with you about Hemingway and his interview that he gave to George Plimpton in the Paris Review in 57?
Nope.
So Hemingway didn't give
I did. The Plimpton one.
Yeah.
Because it was, I know you and I talked about this. It was in a halftime report and I printed it from my weekend reading.
Yep. Did we talk about it on the podcast?
Yeah. No. Yeah, we did. Oh, Jason's nodding his head. Okay, let's not bore everybody.
All right,
let me ask you something. Yes. Where do you write? Like, where are you when you write?
Interestingly, sometimes I just go in my office and shut the door and then I clean everything. My office has never been cleaner.
So you can put off writing?
Well, no, but also any distraction. When you're working on any distraction, so clean. But actually, a lot of it happens in sitting and waiting in the studio or whatever. And I'll just have an idea or something that I want to build on later, and I'll just write it down. I'll write myself an email, and maybe it's only 150 words, but I'll send it to myself. And then that gives me a place so that when my brain is tired, I feel exhausted, or but I know that I have to put words down. I need to hit some words for the day. There's a little kindling for the fire, and that actually works quite well.
Do you write in order? So like, do you jump around?
Well, since this is not a linear, the chapters in this are not linear. They are biographies. They're, you know, they're tied together, but they're separate entities. I'm able to, in a way,
they're jump. Like self-contained.
Yeah. They're self-contained. Jump around. And when I have something that I like, and a friend of mine who is a great researcher is now helping me. And so she is feeding me information that takes me in all different directions. And it's totally, that part is the acquisition of knowledge is so fun, and figuring out these people and understanding this stuff and getting real insight. You know, I think that one of the major things that I come away with is that America is not as different now as from the past as we like to think. And we've talked many times before about the way that the the perceived normalcy of the period from Pearl Harbor to Vietnam has warped our understanding. But I think it goes even farther than that. We have a vision or a version of American politics and public life that things were good and then they got bad. It has been much more uneven than that. It has been much more, yeah, we've lost on many key standards and we're not holding up the side, but we have had a lot of weird, weird, weird moments.
I'm excited. When's your deadline?
March, mid-March.
Do you think you padded it?
I
like,
hope,
is your real deadline like late March?
I don't even let me think about that. I need fear.
Do you write in silence or with music?
It depends. The part where you're thinking and figuring, I needed to be silent. But when basically I'm moving from quote to quote and pasting stuff together and doing it, and it's more it's more workmanlike, and you're sort of screwing together the parts, then music helps. And I've been listening to a ton of. I think the genre is called blue-eyed soul, but basically it's the Hall & Oates. It's white people singing soul recording and singing soul music. I don't know. Pandora.
God, talk about cultural appropriation.
I know. Pandora found me there, and I am
And you're locked in. She's like, I know you.
Because it's really.
I know you.
I know. It's like Meyer Hawthorne and Kings Go Forth.
I like the new Dierks Bentley song.
Unsurprised.
Women, Amen. Have you heard that? It's a little bit bluegrass and country together.
I can't wait to hear it and make fun of you for listening to it.
Everybody, listen to it. hey, while we've been talking, there's been a memo development.
Memo.
So, you know, the whole thing, the Republicans wrote this memo and they're like, oh, it's like a so secret. And then they start this hashtag, release the memo. And then all they go like, release the memo. It's like, just release the freaking memo then.
Right.
I'm sick of it. Just leak it then. I mean, like, they're like, oh, we can't because we're so concerned. Please.
But okay. How do you get attention for
now,
it if you don't?
Yeah. Now the Democrats have written their own memo and they're going to release it. And I'm like, just release the damn memos or don't. Just shut up.
Well, you know,
I'm tired of the memos. I'm sorry. I'm really tired of this memo thing.
Do you know how I know how much disingenuousness is present in all of this?
How?
Do you know who can make unclassified anything?
Yeah.
Donald J. Trump, the president of the United States, has absolute emperor-like power when it comes to the classification of documents, and he can declassify anything he wants. And when anytime you have people that are, oh, I wish I could show you, I wish I could show you, I wish I could show you, it's back there. Unless they're taking their entreaty to the president, unless they say, Mr. President, so for example, on the question of what surveillance did wrong. Now, we know that every time they come back for a renewal of FISA authority and periodically with the courts, the NSA and the intelligence community have to say, okay, we screwed up. These are the times we screwed up. These are the in constant surveillance of all of the electronic communication in the world. These are the times that we accessed files that we shouldn't have accessed. These are the times that we unmasked. Here you go. And they have to release this. You could release the whole thing. One could release the whole thing and have it redacted and release the whole thing. Or you could have Democrats and Republicans cherry pick things from within these reports and then come up with these two totally different worldviews. I am disgusted by the fact that our Congress takes so unseriously its very important work about national security that the politicization and the spinning and the leaking and all of this stuff, it is so unworthy of the mandate to protect and defend the Constitution and the people of the United States. This is serious business. And it's far more serious than merits having these phony scandals whipped up over a leak. And honest to goodness, from listening to these Republicans, you'd think that this Peter Strzok was the smoking man.
Then they also want to use him as the cover that says there's no collusion. See right there in the text, he says there's no collusion.
Right. And it's just I'm
done with it.
I have had quite enough. We should be pretty close to Mueller being finished. He's obviously in the terminal phase because he's interviewing Sessions and he's getting ready to interview Trump. So these are the last things that you do. You don't interview the president first. You interview everybody else. You get everything that you can. Then you do your investigation. And this is the closing off phase. So we're there. Can't we just wait and see and then make some judgments about what he says after he says it?
That's where I am.
Jeebers crow.
Jiminy Christmas. Okay, guess what? There was a new Quinnipiac poll, and you haven't seen it yet.
Don't.
But I have the results right here.
Don't taunt me.
January 24th, 2018. All right.
Okay,
let's see. Dems, the headline is, Dems, Trump, share blame for unnecessary shutdown.
Okay.
Okay. Quinnipiac University national poll finds voters are dissatisfied and angry with government. So this is their top line. The federal government shutdown was mainly unnecessary. 84% of American voters say that.
Yep.
That's pretty good. That's like.
That's true.
Yeah. And actually, America is correct.
Right.
Let's see. Let's see. 32% of voters say Democrats are responsible, while 31 say President Trump is responsible, and 18% point to Republicans.
I think it's kind of polls have been doing this thing where they say, do you think it's Republicans, Democrats, or Trump?
Yeah, I don't think they should do that.
I think it should be Republicans
because,
or Democrats.
Like, what Republicans are against Trump at this point?
It's very few, but
like
some,
five,
I guess.
Five, maybe.
It's not about being against Trump. It's being, are you willing,
Separate, like
Jeff Flake is against Trump, but are you willing to buck him where you think he's wrong or are you cowering? But I would say this. On shutdown stuff, guess what? John Kennedy, the senator from Louisiana, who is, I officially declare, a national treasure. He said it just the best. He said, very partisan Democrat, and I am taking liberties here. Very partisan Democrats think that partisan Democrats are winning on shutdown. Very partisan Republicans think that Republicans are winning on the shutdown. The rest of America is wondering how these folks made it out, made it through the birth canal.
I know, it's funny.
And it's true. This, you know, and it's true on immigration. It's true on government shutdowns. We have reached the point where both parties have decided that it's not worth reaching to the middle. It's not worth, and I don't even mean about compromise, but even caring what persuadable the plurality of the United States, what persuadable voters think about subjects. Everything comes back to fire up your base, please your base, do that, and then we'll win the next election because we'll gross out the persuadable voters so much they'll just stay away. And we will win a base versus base election. Democrats embraced it. Republicans embrace it. Democrats are coming back to it. They're feeling that greater intensity. Because wouldn't you like it if somebody told you, actually, it's sort of like low-carb diet, why it is so attractive. And they say, you know, all you have to do is just eat meat and bacon and cheese, and then you will be happy.
If that were only true.
It is true. That part is true. That part is true. Meat is delicious. I mean,
I love meat too, but
I love animals. They're delicious.
Okay. But not cats.
I don't know. Do you think?
No, hell no.
I would eat a cat. I would
think. Oh my God. Please. Jason, cut that out of the podcast.
You wouldn't?
No. I would not.
You would not eat a cat?
No.
Like
under pass. Hard pass.
Like, well, no, I'm not saying like volitionally, but if there was a plane crash or something.
Oh, well, I'm not. I don't go into those hypotheticals.
Okay, you won't do a hypothetical. No. I'm not saying like I'm going to order.
Did you know that 70% of voters disapprove of Republicans in Congress?
Yes.
63% disapprove of Democrats in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And 2% of Americans are enthusiastic about the federal government works.
How do they feel
Why
about
that?
How do they feel about President Trump?
It doesn't have that here. They didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. This is why I should.
They talk about the Dreamers. They said American voter support 75% to 18%, allowing undocumented immigrants to stay.
75%.
Yep.
Pro Dreamer.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the Republicans better be careful not to over.
Yeah.
Over-interpret.
So did you see what the president's doing on Monday?
What's he
doing?
He's
going to. Sarah Sanders announced today that he is going to release a legislative framework for Dreamers on Monday.
Huh.
But that it will include the other stuff. But I think that they've probably seen that and like, you know what? Get out ahead of it and be the one to solve it.
Right. If only, and this is the big if only. There are enough Republicans. As Schumer demonstrated, as we saw during the shutdown, Democrats aren't going to negotiate anything until you can get all the Republicans behind it or the overwhelming majority of Republicans behind it. And right now, I don't see any immigration policy that could even get 40 or 45 Republicans on board.
Mm-hmm.
There is too much division within the conference in the Senate. That's why it falls to the president, no matter what. He's going to have to be the one that says, I will accept this. I will not accept that. Not make these things better. But in fact, here are bright lines. It has to be this many or it has to be this few. It has to start here. It has to go there. And he has to get into defining terms. Then he can let Congress do the work of negotiating. But he has to define what the terms are, because as he said before, if you're going to get a deal, he's the one who's going to have to take the heat. And that the first part of that is defining what he considers to be in and out of bounds.
Right. Well, we'll see what's going to happen. Do you think there'll be another?
Oh, yeah.
Shutdown?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
You think that Schumer learned his lesson?
He did learn it.
Schumer surrender, as Jesse Waters called it on the show.
The surrender. I think that he did learn his lesson. So I think this shutdown was in large part to tell the liberal members of his conference and those running for president in 2020, hey, you want to shut it down? Here you go. Now, of course, their calculus did not include that the House would so swiftly and easily pass a short-term spending package. And they did. And Ryan showed that they could. But now for Schumer, so he said, you want to touch the hot stove? You touch the hot stove. So they did. But there is no progress so far on the underlying problem. There is no progress so far that I can imagine on immigration. And remember, we still have to deal with Obamacare. We still have a debt ceiling lift coming. We have other issues that have to be addressed, and they've got to be addressed this winter and spring. I have to think that at some point, well, unless the Republicans do get together on immigration, but I would have to think that at some point we're going to be at shutdown city again.
Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Right in the middle of the Olympics.
Oh, yeah. When are the Olympics?
I don't know. Like the middle of 2 weeks of February.
Do you like the Olympics?
Love.
Love?
Love it.
Really?
Yeah, I love the Olympics. I wish it was every 4 years.
Well, it is.
No, I meant, like, remember it used to be.
Do them both?
Yes. It's too much. It's like doing the Olympics every 2 years is like having football on four nights a week.
Which we pretty much do, but yes, I take your point.
It's too much.
Do you like the Winter Olympics or the Summer Olympics?
I'm more of a summer person.
I think I'm a Winter Olympics person.
Yeah, because you don't like the heat.
I definitely don't like the heat. Number one, as a fat American, but number two, I find the Summer Olympics always just gets subsumed. Though I suppose this has figure skating. Ugh. But,
what about ice dancing?
Oh, the worst. Not sports. They're not sports. Anything that is subjectively judged.
Do you like the cross-country skiing?
I like the biathlon.
Yeah, that's cool. That's
biathlon
cool
is super cool.
Yep.
And you see the chicks, the biathlon women, and they're like, yep, I'm bad. And you know it. And I'm like, you're bad. You're bad.
You're bad.
I'm not.
You like
not
the hockey?
I like the hockey. I like the curling, ice bowling.
You do. You like the curling.
I like the curling.
You just say that because it's like.
No, and I just say you're saying I'm trying to stake out the cool points on liking curling.
Yeah.
No, I like the idea that it's like bowling, and I like bowling, and I would like ice bowling. So I'm in. But mostly, I like the slalom. I like the ski jump, and I like when people put basically a condom over their entire body, strap themselves to a hockey skate, and shoot down a mountain at 500 miles an hour. I dig
the luge.
Well, the luge and the skeleton and all that stuff. Yeah.
On the five a couple weeks ago, we had to say what sport we would be good at. And I said the luge, just because I could just hop right in there and zip on down. And nobody that does the luge must listen, watch the five, because nobody complained. But I said, basically, it doesn't take much skill. I'm sure I'm wrong.
I'm sure there are secrets of the luge. And have you seen Skeleton?
Yeah.
Where it's basically like for people who thought the luge was too comfortable.
Easy. Yeah.
Yeah, it was too comfortable and it was too much of a smooth ride. Basically, that's where they're strapping you to a hockey skate and shooting you down the mountain.
But I always love the human interest stories, like the person that worked so hard and they caught a break and then something happened, like they broke a leg and then they rehabilitate and then they make it back to the Olympics and they are triumphant. I love that.
As long as I don't have to watch the things that are judged and not measured, I'm content.
That's interesting.
I do not like subjective sports.
Interesting. I love that. I like how you say that. Now, I do like gymnastics.
Meh. How do you determine? Oh, she was a 9.7.
I know.
But she was a 9.6.
All of them are so good. I know.
So you get the gold because you touched the side of the pommel horse more sweatily than the one from where. And it's like, give me a break.
I just got a visual. And
sweatily upon the pommel horse. Yes.
All right. Want questions? This is from the mailbag.
Oh, mailbag.
Here we go.
Hit it.
What is your Super Bowl watch party snack? Your go-to Super Bowl watch party snack?
None. Eagles and Patriots. I decline.
Wow. You know what Peter said as he's watching it? He goes,
what?
Jesus Christ. I'm going to have to root for the Eagles?
Yeah, I mean, I do want the Eagles to win. I'm rooting for the Eagles.
Can you believe those words are coming out of your mouth?
It's very terrible. It's very, very terrible. And, you know, the Eagles fan base has a lot of neat stories and all. I saw Jake Tapper and his dad at the game. I didn't see him, but I saw the pictures of it. And I'm sure it's all very nice and there's all these good things. But the degree to which both of these teams embrace rottenness as virtues. Yeah, we cheat. Yeah, we stink. Yeah, we threw snowballs at Santa. You know, the Eagles, as a point of pride with their fans, that they have a jail or had a jail at their stadium to lock up the unruly, rotten fans. The degree to which both of them embrace black hat status is just like, ugh, I can't. It's too much.
Can't do it.
It's
can't
too much.
Can't do it.
But that doesn't mean I won't eat chicken wings that day.
I like the chips and salsa. I just love chips and salsa.
How decadent of you.
Tostitos or whatever that brand is, they have a new multi-grain, like flaxseed fiber thing.
Ooh.
Chip.
That's
a scoop.
Get me a little hot under the collar with a flaxseed scoop.
Ooh. So good, though.
Louis, who works in the Washington Bureau, was telling me I'm going to try it out. He had a recipe for a bacon cheeseburger soup, and I'm going to make it.
Interesting.
And I'm going to eat it. I'm going to do it.
I had a question for you.
This goes
back to politics. What do you think about what's going to happen with these mayors of cities that are now being threatened with lawsuits and possibly
subpoenas,
but also, you know, criminal violations for not, I guess, following federal guidelines on immigration law or breaking the law, I guess, as the Justice Department would say.
Yeah.
And now the mayors are all getting their backs up and now we're just going to be having an impasse.
No one who I would suspect that no mayor who would be subject to those punishments would think anything other than how wonderful it was if they could get Jeff Sessions to arrest them.
Yeah.
I would say
and Bill de Blasio, he was first out of the gate. He's like, I'm out, not going to the meeting. And then Mitch Landrieu said the same. And it's like, okay, anyone who thinks they have 2020 designs.
Well, and also it's just good. It's good home politics.
Yeah.
If it was good home politics where you are to be in favor of shielding illegal immigrants from federal authorities, if you already thought that was true, then it would be even better if you could get Jeff Sessions to put you in jail. Then you could be
hero.
Exactly. So
I'm looking for a hero.
It misunderstands.
Who's saying that? Bonnie Tyler?
Irene Cara?
No, Bonnie Tyler.
Bonnie Tyler?
Mm-hmm.
Does Jason say that?
Yeah, he's giving me the thumbs up.
I'm skeptical,
and
but
he's
okay.
Giving you the thumbs
down.
Okay, another question. What do you think Republicans can do to grow the party among millennials?
Well, the problem that Republicans have with millennials, the Republicans have serious problems with millennials. They hate Trump. They're disgusted. It is going to have serious second and third order consequences for Republicans in out years, just because because of the cultural response. But the big, you know, I would just say this: young voters are typically Democrats, older voters are more typically Republicans. Yes, there's exceptions and da 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 da, but we're talking about in large part the challenge for Republicans is at the pivot moment. Which is when, and I'm sorry to say this, suburban America, but when people move to the burbs, and they set up housekeeping, they get married, they have kids. That's part of the transition from reliable Democrats to reliable Republicans. That's not happening the way that it was before. And especially as the median age for first marriage approaches 30 years old, this is a huge demographic gap for Republicans. And that means that they're going to have an answer with those voters, because that section of the country is going to get bigger and bigger over the next decade.
Interesting. All right. What was it like? And do you remember meeting me for the first time? I remember I reached out to you.
You reached out to me because you wanted
emails.
Emails.
I wanted your thoughts. I wanted to have a podcast with you in 2009. I didn't even know what a podcast was.
Even before we knew what podcasts were, we knew it was meant to be. I'm sure it was at Fox. It was probably in New York.
No, probably D.C.
Probably D.C. Okay. Yeah. But
it's like
yes.
We've always known each other.
Exactly.
Exactly. All right. Sometimes I find it hard to picture Chris as a child. What was I, on the other hand, have no problem.
No problem with that. Exactly.
I find it hard to picture Chris as a child. What was Chris's favorite childhood toy?
Well, I don't know what my – I mean, the favorite would change with age, wouldn't it? The G.I. Joe aircraft carrier. What? But I would say I was talking with my youngest man child. We were talking about he felt chagrined because he still likes stuffed animals, or maybe a little sheepish about the fact that he's a first grader and he still likes stuffed animals and still likes to collect them and get them and have them, and he felt a little sheepish about that. And it gave me the opportunity to tell him the story of Mrs. Beaver, who was my parents brought Mrs. Beaver back from a trip they had gone on. And it was a beaver who had a little Velcro patch on her tail that a baby beaver rode on.
Nice.
And I probably was about my son's age when I got Mrs. Beaver. Mm-hmm. And I developed an entire life for Mrs. Beaver. She lived in the wood between or down by the Dalzell's house down the way. And I had she had a rich, full life in my mind. And it was super important to me. And I loved her. I have no idea, of course, where she is, but I loved her. And it was great. And I thought it was fantastic. And I told my son that in putting it in context of like, it's totally normal. And the stuff that we do with imagination like that is the best of all.
And did he laugh at you or agree?
He laughed at me, but I hope he thought
you planted a little seed there.
Thought it was cool.
All right. So Chris Arwald has mentioned nonfiction books he loves, but does he read much fiction? If so, what authors does he like?
Tom Wolfe, Hemingway. Who do I like? Fiction writers who I like.
I'm reading the best book right now.
What is it?
Light Years by James Salter.
Okay.
I'm going to have to highly recommend. I'm not going to recommend it for the podcast book club.
Did you see you didn't see in Halftime Report, we had
the nicest
letter about the book club with a suggestion.
It was so nice. It was a suggestion. I emailed that to myself so that I could look up that book he recommended.
I'm gonna look it up, and I promise to our correspondent that we will both research the book, and we will get back to you about your suggestion.
So the other book club I'm in, I got the book that I'm supposed to read for it.
What's the next book for you? What is it?
It's another one of these ones of like looking into the future everything is bleak and horrible.
A dystopian
imagining
of the future.
Mm. Ready Player One, it's called.
Oh, that they've made the movie about.
Yeah. Oh, see, that's the good thing.
I don't know if the movie will be out in time for you, though.
Oh, damn. I might have to call the movie studio.
See, if it's a Fox movie, you can say, hey, I'm going to stop by.
Spielberg.
You're out.
I'm going to have to read that thing. But, you know, I got time this weekend because Peter's got to go to the Emirates.
Oh, really?
For a big conference called Arab Health.
Okay.
Big conference. Huge. You know Javits?
Yep.
They have like 34 of those in a row.
Holy croconut.
Like crazy big. Oh, maybe that's the one in Germany. I don't know. Whatever.
So you're at leisure.
do you want to call taking care of Jasper leisure?
Well, you're
when you take care of Jasper by yourself, you're in Jasper jail.
You're unsupervised anyway.
Yeah. So, but I have a lot of time to read.
Yes.
I love that. Like, nobody bother me.
And you can eat as
nobody
much.
Nobody shut down the government. I don't want to hear it.
And you can eat as much quinoa as you want.
All right. You ready for your trivia?
I'm ready.
All right.
Now more than ever.
Okay. Wait, where'd it go? Where did it go? Question number one. Since J. Edgar Hoover, who held the shortest term as a non-acting Senate-confirmed FBI director.
Who held the shortest term? Who held the shortest term? The terms are, 10 years, I think.
Yes, that's true.
Who had the briefest tenure as for? I have no idea.
James Comey.
Oh!
3 years, 247 days.
Comey, my homie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just as an aside, stop it, James Comey.
Oh, my gosh. Do you know that I have a theory?
Stop.
That older-ish.
Nice save.
Guys.
Yeah.
In politics.
Yes.
Or media/politics.
Yes.
Are ruining themselves. Their reputations. All that they've built, all that they've done, it's nonsensical. They've got to get a different hobby than Twitter. It is embarrassing.
It is totally embarrassing. And the sanctimony.
And they should get on Instagram.
Get on the Insta.
Just show off your photography skills and then nobody will make fun of you.
Just keep your clothes on. Comey is just ridiculous and the sanctimony.
Oh, my gosh. It's like watching a morning show on another cable network.
Fair point. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Question number two. Who was the only man to hold the titles of FBI director and CIA director? This was 1978 to 87 for the FBI and 87 to 91 CIA.
Oh, shoot.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know who it is.
Mm-hmm.
But my brain is not working in that way. If it was, we were taping this in the morning, I would have
before
it.
Before it was attrited?
Before my brain was attrited.
Ground down, you mean?
Ground down. Say his name and then I'll go, oh, yeah.
William H. Webster.
Yep.
Where's he from?
I don't know. Arkansas?
Mm-hmm. Oh, also, here, case in point. My friend, Jeb Bush, has just tweeted, Trump country, tax reform at work. And it's an article in the Wall Street Journal about Starbucks and is written by, I think, you know, Best of the Web Today?
James Toronto, yes.
No, it's not Toronto anymore. James Freeman writes it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I read your afternoon newsletter first,
mm-hmm.
and then theirs, but yours comes sometimes later.
Sometimes.
So this is about how Starbucks jumped on the tax cut train.
Oh, well, and by the way,
I think it's going to be pretty hard. At some point, companies who have not given out bonuses or raises or some sort of extra deal for their employees, they're going to become the outliers.
Well, and the other thing is this narrative being out there gives companies awesome cover for firing people. It creates a wonderful communications window where hey, we're giving everybody $100.
But Walmart tried that in one day. Remember
when
they announced their big deal and then, oh, by the way, we're closing all these Sam's Clubs.
Right. And it works because the narrative, it's amazing to watch the press. Tax cuts are a disaster. Tax cuts are a disaster. The disaster is going to be a disaster. Hey, these tax cuts are fantastic. I can't believe how great the tax cuts are. There's no cool. They have no chill. Everything is either the worst thing that ever happened in the history of humankind or the greatest revolution that has ever occurred. There's no like, well, we're watching it and we'll let you know. We'll let you know how this all works out. But here's a data point.
Oh, by the way, we didn't talk about the hero of the week.
Who?
The judge in Michigan in the case against the coach who was molesting all of those athletes,
ugh,
especially the gymnasts.
Yeah.
That judge was amazing.
Am I allowed to voice an unpopular opinion?
Try it.
The hero to me was that young woman who was the first to come forward.
Yeah, agree.
And took it when all of the Michigan State apparatus, everything.
I know, and they gave it such a hard time.
Everything was against her.
People are going to get fired.
But are they better? They better. And Michigan State ought to face serious consequences because of this. But I would just say, people always tell me that we need more cameras in more courtrooms and more cameras, more places, and more video in more places. I disagree entirely. And I wish that we could take the cameras back out of C-SPAN was a mistake. I wish we could take the cameras back out of the conference rooms and out of the Congress. And for goodness sakes, keep the cameras, video cameras, out of the Supreme Court. Turning things into television changes the things that they are, and it makes people act like they're on television. And I feel like the judge in that case, the sentence was like, what, 175 years or something, mm-hmm. for a guy who's already facing 100 years. But the theatrics of it and all of that stuff and when she dramatically tossed aside his letter and did all that stuff, it was a little Judge Judy for my taste. And I would just say to people that public transparency and the ability for people to know what happens in proceedings is not the same as turning them into television. That's all.
Indeed. All right. Well, that's fun.
If you say, yeah. As long as you're happy.
I got to go do the
other show. Yes, ma'am. They like it.
All right. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this one on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And leave us a review. A good one, please. This has been Perino and Starwalt. I'll tell you what on Fox News Radio.